I just wanted to make a comment on the day of the Lord there in Joel. There are two reasons why that I would suggest that the judgment at the beginning of chapter 3 is not particularly what we would think of as the final judgment of all the world at the end of time. And first of all, at the end of chapter 2, when he discusses the outpouring of the Spirit and the day of the Lord, I think that's pretty clear. The day of the Lord there in verse 31 is the destruction of Jerusalem in 70. And then verse 1 of chapter 3 says, "For behold, in those days and at that time, when I bring back the captives of Judah and Jerusalem." Now, the remnant that's going to be saved, obviously, are the Jews that obey the gospel at that time. And during that generation of time between Pentecost and the destruction of Jerusalem in 70, is when the Jews, the remnant, was brought together out of the nations. And it's at that time is when all the nations are going to be gathered in the valley, and judgment is going to be. And then at the end of the chapter 3, the restoration, I agree with everything you said about that section, but I would suggest that based on the position of that text in the letter, that's talking about blessings now in the kingdom and not what we would think of as maybe the confirmation or fulfillment in heaven itself. And so because of that, I think maybe the judgment there is not the final judgment at the end of the world, but it's just simply a sort of a figurative spiritual judgment of the gospel being spread to all the nations and men judging themselves as to whether they obey or disobey the gospel.
I believe that's the judgment taking place in the Valley of Jehoshaphat here. That judgment through the gospel, really. I think that's the case.
Any cut?
You know, the prophets, all of these prophets were studying, there's three major elements in them that are very important. Many times all three are found, sometimes two of them are found. Oracles against the nations, oracles against Judah, and then an oracle of hope for Judah. And this is found in these books as well. But in Obadiah, there's no oracle against Judah. It's an oracle of hope, incidentally, for Judah. But on Joel 1st, I'd really like to know when you think Joel was written. And discuss that, because if he was written early, it looks to me like a lot of prophets quoted him. If he was written later, maybe he quoted these prophets.
Well, various sources I read, they said it was entirely possible that other prophets were in fact maybe quoting him. You know, it's just as easy to assume that. And apparently the Hebrew scholars, from what I've read, most of them placed early in the canon around 837 B.C., apparently. But that's one of the arguments that scholars use to try to show it was post-exilic David, because they said, well, Joel was quoting these other prophets, but it can't be proven in this case. They may be quoting him.
Yeah, there are some other statements made about Judah and Jerusalem that seem to indicate that, you know, Israel's not around, and the Greeks and stuff, which makes it
Syria is not mentioned. That's another thing that you should try to prove that it's a post-exilic today.
Right. I think the theme of Joel is the day of the Lord. I might disagree with Terry here a little bit on something he said, not on the entire comment, but I think the day of the Lord is used. We talked about Amos. In Amos, the people were talking about the day of the Lord, which meant the destruction of their enemies and blessings for them. And Amos said, no, the day of the Lord is going to be a day that you won't look forward to either. In Joel, the first half of Joel, he seems to use the day of the Lord to refer to a time when he's going to, just like Amos said, he's going to punish the children of Israel as well. But the second half of the book, I don't believe it refers to the destruction of Jerusalem. I believe that he's referring to the way they would like to refer. refer to the day of the Lord, a day that they will be blessed and their enemies will be punished. And then, of course, Obadiah, again, is going to use the day of the Lord. You know, it's all of these, not all of them, but many of these books, it's such an important theme. And Joel, it is the theme of Joel. But I'll let you comment on that. And, well, you comment on it now, and I'll ask then, I guess, the questions on Obadiah. It'll be a little different.
No, it may be. I'm a little indefinite on that. I think the judgment is, of course, the final judgment is sort of pictured in all of this. I mean, it all points toward that, and also in comps that probably is the destruction of Jerusalem. But I think Joel certainly had a more imminent judgment in mind. I mean, a nearer judgment than all those in mind would have seen that in reality.
Well, there's oracles of hope, and I think the last part of Joel is an oracle of hope. And I believe that the day of the Lord he uses there to show that they would be blessed and their enemies would be punished. And I don't see how the destruction of Jerusalem would be a time when they would be blessed in any way if he was referring to that.
Well, what do you think about that? Observer's observation may be the day of Pentecost being that time of
I don't think there's any basis for that in the context, but anyway. On Obadiah, just a couple of things. Now, do you think the date of Obadiah is probably about a year after the destruction of Jerusalem, 585?
Yes.
And we know it's before 581 because that's when this was fulfilled. You know, the Edomites were actually destroyed 5 years later after the destruction of Jerusalem.
Yeah, that's by inference that we would know that. Right. There's no specific statement except that it's recorded that the Babylonians take Egypt, and so they took some of that territory that was in between them and Egypt. And what's the general word that's used there? It's that refers to that. Anyway, the Edomites aren't mentioned specifically.
But I want you to talk about, you know, even maybe if you want to, Psalm 137, verse, I think it's 7, because that's a psalm that they sang in Babylon, and it was before the destruction of the Edomites, because, you know, they were, you know, rejoicing at in fact, we can date Psalm 137 as a result of what's said in that book. We know it's after the destruction of Jerusalem, but we know it's before the Edomites were destroyed in 581. What does it say in verse 7?
It says, "Remember, O Lord, what the Edomites did on the day Jerusalem fell. Tear it down, they cried. Tear it down to its foundations."
Right.
Yeah.
There's one thing I think that's interesting about Obadiah as well, is I think there is a law of retribution. God has a law of retribution. And he was going to pay back the Edomites for their sins. And I believe that law of retribution stands with other nations as well. But I think Obadiah shows that. And if you want to comment, you can. But the wisdom, you know, they boasted a lot. They were wise people. They had a fortress. They also were known for their wisdom. Eliphaz the Temanite was, of course, an Edomite. So, Jeremiah 49. Do you think he borrowed from Jeremiah, or Jeremiah borrowed from him, or you know, a lot of the first part of Obadiah is the same as Joel 3.
Right. I would think Obadiah borrowed from Jeremiah on that, because Jeremiah was he was left when the city of Jerusalem was taken. And let's see, I haven't studied Jeremiah, but then he was carried by his countrymen down into Egypt, it's believed, before the, you know, after Gedaliah was assassinated. I just think that it would have been that Obadiah would have read Jeremiah's prophecy or heard it first. Maybe not.
I just wanted to get your thoughts on verse 21, what he's referring to when he refers to the saviors or the deliverers. What you thought that would be fulfilled in?
Well, I think that, yeah, I think this is ultimately it's messianic in its theme. That's my view. If you're asking who the deliverers are, you know, I don't know. I would guess that, you know, the gospel is simply being sent forth from Mount Zion. The mountains of Esau or the mountains of Edom, that's Edom is used, as has already been shown, to refer to the Gentiles. In the passage from Amos that's quoted in Acts, so, you know, the Edomites had been adversaries of the Jews for centuries, and they come to represent just the Gentile nations. And so this passage here when it speaks about deliverers, you know, will go up. My version says on Mount Zion, or footnotes from Mount Zion, to govern the mountains of Esau. I understand that to be that, you know, the gospel was going to go forth from Zion throughout the Gentile world.
Of course, you made reference earlier to Mount Zion, there shall be deliverance, meaning the gospel being preached. And I think perhaps there's a connection there.
Right, yeah,
with verse 21. Mm-hmm. And I've read where that perhaps it has reference to the apostles and those who proclaim the word of God.
Being the deliverers?
Right.
Yeah. That's possible. I sometimes hesitate about getting into specifics on things because, maybe we make it too narrow when we do that.
Richard, I wanted just to comment a little bit on some things that have just been said here about the gospel being the fulfillment of some of these passages and all, and see perhaps if you agree with this or not. As we study the Messianic kingdom, you know, there are several figures, several metaphors used to describe the kingdom. It's a kingdom of peace, but at the same time, it's also described in a sense of being an aggressive kingdom. It's described with military metaphors. And in doing so, a lot of times in a Messianic passage, it talks about conquering Edom. And I think you may have hit upon this just a second ago, but in your study of Edom, obviously you went through the history of it and how Edom evolved and the strife between Edom and Israel. But by the time we get into the Messianic prophecies, do you see Edom as being merely a symbol of the world as opposed to the truth?
Yeah, I think many of the passages, you know, are viewed even by the Jewish rabbins, you know, as being, this isn't just the nation that has descended from Esau, but this is the world.
We've talked about James Smith and his book. It interests me that James Smith takes these last four or five verses and finds their fulfillment in the book of Acts. In fact, the different cities and places that he talks about here that they will conquer. He believes that he can find these within the book of Acts, that this is a history of the church taking the gospel to that part of the world. Anyway, there are several passages that describe the kingdom, as I've said, as being militaristic. One of them is Isaiah 11, which we're going to talk about a little bit tonight. Amos 9 that was briefly alluded to this afternoon. After in verse 11, he talks about the fact that the tabernacle of David will be rebuilt. In the very next verse, he says that they will possess Edom. Again, the thought seems to be that this is the gospel, taking the gospel to the world. Now, I wanted to make another comment on Melvin's study about the day of judgment there in chapter 3, and some things that have been said about the prophets having oracles of hope and oracles of destruction, to talk about them simultaneously. When God brings about salvation, at the same time He brings about destruction for His enemies. You know, when He saves one, obviously He destroys the others who don't accept salvation. Jesus made the statement in John chapter 12, and verse 31, "Now is the time for judgment on this world. The prince of this world will be driven out." Does it not seem that through the death and burial and resurrection of Jesus and His ascension into heaven, that brought about salvation? But at the same time, for those who rejected it, that brings about judgment. And so in that sense, when the gospel came, judgment has also come to all the world. The world has been judged for its wickedness. And so therefore, it doesn't have to be talking about judgment at the end of time. It can be talking about judgment that began when the gospel began.
I think that has to do also that idea about the valley of the Lord's path, the judgment taking place. I think that's an ongoing judgment, really, of the gospel.